It says it's recording, but it's not counting again, so I don't know. So we'll use this guy for backup and see what happens.
Good morning. I'm Commissioner Brad Holton. Present is Commissioner Van Beek, Commissioner Brooks. And with that, we have a 9:30 agenda item to start, and it would be fiscal year 2025 budget workshop for the Advocates Against Family Violence. So good morning. Welcome. Good morning. So we're here to hear your presentation. There's no need to go over the documentation that you sent us. Let's just hear it from your heart and what you have to say.
All right. First of all, thank you for the continued support that we have received from the county. Our program doesn't exist without the funding. This past year, $75,000 went directly to victim services. With the additional $50,000, the additional of it went to finish the West Wing remodel. There was mold remediation that had to be done, and so we had to get that taken care of, which put extra on that we didn't get funded through the emergency shelter through the COVID funding. This past year, we did see a 27% increase in intakes and services from the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
The county's growing, and exponentially, we know that 1 in 3 of what's reported are going to have some sort of victimization in their life. 1 in every 3 individuals. So I look at what's being approved to come into all of the cities, all of the subdivisions that are being approved, and we're the only full-service program in all of Camden County. We're the only shelter. We're the only full-service program. All of our staff are trauma-trained. Our team, the youth outreach program, it took off. And we've got, can you hear from my heart here? Last year, we served 417 healthy relationship presentations with 6,300 students attending. But right now, we have 69 students and youth on our caseload for direct services and advocacy support service, and 8 of those are sexual assault cases. Even one of those is too many. Just in case. It's like going to church. Sorry.
Allergies.
Allergies?
Yeah.
No, it's like going to church. But 69 little ones are on our current caseload, with 8 of those that have been sexually assaulted. One's just one too many, and we know that that's just the tip of the iceberg, and we're the only program in all of Canyon County that is reaching out to those youth and that is doing the services that we're doing. Our shelter last year, we had 7,002 safe shelter nights. That was a 36% increase from the previous year. Part of that was because the West Wing was being remodeled, but the majority of that, right now we have 19 individuals on the wait list for shelter. Again, one of those is way too many, but if we're not there and our shelter isn't there, then how are we going to serve those survivors and those that are being victimized within the county? That we won't be able to serve them, they're not going to be there. Our greatest concern for this next coming year, we've had some shelter roof leak. I mean, the building is 105 years old. It sits on the National Historical Register. It's beautiful. It's a 16,000 square foot facility. But we had a shelter roof leak, and so we have had to close down 2 resident rooms, and we just this last week had to close down another one because of more leakage. I just got the bid, and it's $70,000 to replace the roof. That wasn't in our budget. We didn't have that in the budget to do that, and so we're needing to find another $70,000 to replace the roof. And then just the regular general upkeep and repair of the shelter. We have had to completely repaint and redo all of the rooms within the shelter. We had an ESG walkthrough. They came came through and walked through, and if there's even just a little speck of paint, you fail. And so we had some dings. We were getting ready to repaint anyways, but the bid on that right now is $17,000 to finish the paint on that. That's just the interior. Doesn't include any of the exterior. We have had a 5% decrease every single year for the last 3 years from the council funding, which is the Idaho Council on Domestic Abuse and Sexual Assault. That's a state-funded program. It comes through the feds, it comes through the state, and we've seen a 5% decrease for the last 3 years, so that's been four staff that we haven't been able to fund. So we've got staff taking up two or three positions and doing the work, and we're needing to replace those positions as well. We've been told that there's going to be another possible 5% decrease this year and the following year, so that's another 10% out of that. So when I look at another $65,000, that's at least two more staff people. So I've got to figure out how to keep the program going and how to keep us funded so that we can continue to serve the individuals we need to serve. I know I put in the request the comparison between us and the Napa Family Justice Center, and the Napa Family Justice Center is a beautiful program and we work very closely with them. However, they are 100% funded by, well, they've got 10.93 staff positions that are fully funded through the city, and then they also have 26 positions that are grant funded, which the majority of all of our positions are grant funded or through the commissioner, which the commissioner, the county funding pays for the counselor program, and then pays also for some of the shelter. With that being said, our budget this past year was $3.23 million. The funding that was received through the commissioners was just right at 2% of our total budget. When I look at this next year, our budget, what it's going to be doing, and the individuals that have to be served, we're going to be increasing our budget this next year. We're just going to have to, so that we can get the staff positions filled and continue to meet the needs. The Youth Rock program, that took off exponentially, like I said, not even anything that we anticipated. Part of it is being funded through Southwest District Health, but it's not even 1% of the total budget for that program. Even though the Napa Family Justice Center is there, we still, of those who report, we are a self-reporting agency, so we can't make anybody report where they're from or ask them any other questions unless they absolutely want to go ahead and divulge that information at intake. But last year, we still served 455 individuals from NAMPA. So they're still coming through to our program. We're still giving them the supportive services and the shelter that they need through our counseling programs and our other 14 programs and classes that we have available to the individuals that we serve. So the $75,000, like I said, is just right at 2% of what we did in last year. You know, 16,713 direct services. That was a huge increase in what we're doing. And I asked Tricia, our operations director, yesterday. I was getting ready for the presentation, and I said, Tricia, how are we doing this? How are we still serving more? It was a 27% increase from 2022. She said, I have to remind you, part of that was because of the West Wing being closed. But the other portion of that is we're all doing three different jobs. I just picked up another position too, so I'm doing three jobs. Trisha's doing three jobs. We've got an overlap in staff everywhere, and they're exhausted. But if not us, then who? You know, I don't know who else and where else the services are going to come from. So are there any questions?
Chairman?
Yes.
I wanted you to talk a little bit, Kim, I think you've done it in years past, about your relationship with the prosecuting attorney's office and then the sheriff's office. So you have, from what I understand, a really involved relationship between those two offices and what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the prosecuting attorney's office, we've worked hand in hand with them for the whole time we've been open, which is right now 21 years. We're 21 years serving in Canyon County. It's waned off a little bit because of all the court restrictions now. We had a court advocate that was in the courts full time. She was over here full time. Well, now somehow, some way, they got audited, and there's been this restriction that nobody knew was there, and you can't divulge anything with a case to an outside agency unless that individual comes to us and says, I need your help. So as a result, our court advocacy program has gone down exponentially because we were told you can still be in the court, but you can't go seek anybody out, and you can't go to the hearings anymore. You can't be present, and we can't refer to you. All we can say is there are services available, and our brochures were out on the countertop. Well, we were spending eight hours a day at the courthouse, and this last year, three individuals were able to be serviced. That's not good, and so we've tried to figure out how we can actually get to those individuals and get the services that they need for the advocacy and support through that court process. I had to go to court last year because I was in an auto accident. And I work with the judges all the time, and I got there, and he was in his black robe, and I was scared to death. And he's like, Kim, it's okay, you do it. But so I put that just brought to light to me what those survivors go through, and if they don't have that advocacy and that support with them, it can be extremely horrifying. And then to actually be able to have the assistance that we provide through all of the court documentation and anything else that needs to be filed. We have a paralegal on staff. She's there 24/7, 365 to help support anybody anytime needed. So we did see a drop in that. The prosecutions have gone down. There's more cases being pled down than ever before because there's not enough room in the jail. Well, in our estimation, there's a lot of individuals in the jail that if there could be just a shift in a program to help with those who are in there because of drugs and whatever, that would be the space to open it up to more convictions for domestic abuse and sexual assault. They're all being played down to misdemeanors, and then that offender is free to go and do whatever they want again and again and again. So that just keeps that cycle in the county, it's just a constant cycle because the offenders aren't really having to serve the time that they need to serve and aren't getting the sentencing that they need. I remember a conversation with Brian Tanner. I said, Brian, why aren't we getting the prosecutions? And he goes, well, Kim, do you want me to prosecute him, or do you want me to prosecute someone who's murdered someone? I said, I want you to prosecute both of them. I want them to be prosecuted to the fullest, and I want them all to be serving the time that they should be serving. And not only just to be serving the time, but then there should be a program with supportive services for that offender as well. Because if you're an offender, 9 times out of 10, you were a victim to begin with. And so you were raised in that cycle. You were raised there. So we need to stop that cycle somewhere, somehow. And so that's why we started our youth program, was just, you know, if we can get to those youth and help them figure out where to stop that cycle in a family, then hopefully at some point we'll quit seeing as many. I mean, it's always been my dream to slap a lock on that shelter and go, yay, there's not going to be any more abuse.
And you do provide programming for people that are in the shelter, so that you're saying a two-stage approach with the domestic violence for the offender, and then you have programming for the victim that helps them have a place to be safe until they can make it without the offender.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because 9 times out of 10, it's sad, but the reality is that they will go back, and it's statistical, it's out there, that they'll go back a minimum of 7 times before the lights finally go on and go, you know what, I think I can do this. And it's not just in our shelter that we're serving those those survivors. I mean, they don't all live in our shelter. That's why we had this almost 17,000 victim services, because they're coming from the community, they're coming through the court system, they're coming through referrals from other outside agencies. Jim County called us and said, we need you. And we're like, well, you have to support us and you have to fund the program, because otherwise we can't. But right now we've got 4 sexual assault cases in Jim County.
How many counties are you serving?
All of the state of Idaho and out beyond the state of Idaho. So we serve Canyon County, Jim County. We've had, this last year we had, the cities that we served last year, we served 14 individuals from Boise, 2 from Burley, 386 out of Caldwell, Eagle, Emmett, Garden City, Greenleaf, Homedale, Cuna, Marcy, and Nova. And that's just a few of those that reported where they came from. There was still 165 that didn't close, disclose where they came from. Wilder, Star, Parma, Notice, Nampa, Middleton, Oregon.
And Chairman, I know you have a lot of data, so you're really data-driven, types of crimes and all that that's committed. That's where you work closely with the Sheriff's Office to figure out those
the
analytics.
The Sheriff's Office and the police departments.
Yep, and I see the letter from Chief Ingram in here. I don't see, are you getting, based on those numbers, any, do you have a rubric for cost per victim or shelter or anything you do?
Right now, based on our budget and those that were served, it's right at $165 an hour to serve those individuals. That's what the cost is for the program.
You're getting support, like when you were talking about the Jim County, are they, okay, so that's my
That's
question.
Something that's just all been brand new this last year. And there's a program over there, but they don't serve sexual assault victims, and they don't have the advocacy and support services that we have. They're not trauma driven. They will only help someone if they come to them requesting a protection order. So outside of that protection order, then they're not getting any other services. And that's why the victim witness coordinator over in Jim County reached out to us and said, I've seen the work that you're doing through the courts and your programs over there in Canyon County. We need you. And we said, we don't have the support to come do that, but we will come over and talk to you. And so right now we have written a grant with Jim County. Fingers crossed. You know, I mean, but those grants are hard to come sometimes, especially if they're federal. And this one is going to come through the Violence Against Women, VAWA program. And we wrote it for $75,000 so that we can have advocate over there full time and then help with the support services.
And how many other programs are trauma driven? Because that's a different specialty than just.
None that I'm aware of.
Okay. So it's, you serve a really unique niche in the area.
And like all of our staff, they have to have, before they even can meet with a client, they have to go through 65 hours of training. And then there's continued training every single year from there to keep the trauma coming.
And your staff, they have tremendous hearts, but they're not overpaid.
No.
In any stretch of the imagination.
No. In fact, after COVID, and McDonald's raised their, you know, $15 an hour. Okay, so for $15 an hour, are you going to do trauma-informed care? Or are you going to go flip a hamburger? I'm sorry, I do this all day, every day, but some days it's like, I'm just going to go flip a burger for a few days. You know, and our staff, they're so dedicated to the mission. And the majority of our staff have been there from the inception. Ashley, our counselor, she's been there from day one. Trisha, our operations director, she's been there 20 years over 21. I've been there 16. Our shelter coordinator, she was actually a survivor and then went to work in the thrift store when we had our thrift store. And then she came on and wanted to do victim services. And so she went through all of the training and was the victim service specialist. And then now she's our shelter director. So she's been with us a very long time. We only have two positions that ever really turn over, and those are our half-time positions, our part-time positions. One of them is an overnight shelter because, like I said, we're 24/7, 365, and so we have a advocate who is at the shelter in the evening and all through the night, and that's a part-time position. So it it turns over quite a bit, and then we have one in the daycare that turns over because it's a part-time position as well. But everybody full-time has been there a very long time. We're a family.
And then maybe the last question I have, you don't have, or I guess maybe I'll say it differently, the socioeconomic diversity, it's not limited to one class, you have everything in there.
Yep, and we've said forever that we don't care. Like, there's so many programs out there that want to diversify. Okay, so if you're only in this class, then we can only serve you here. But at AAFE, we've always said, we don't care if you're yellow, pink, black, or white. We don't care if you're a day old or 100. Well, our oldest victim that we served this past year was 84 years old. Shouldn't have been. She shouldn't be being abused the way she was abused. So no, there's no limits to our services, no resources that we have. If you've been a victim, you've been a victim, and we're there to help support you.
Thank you for the work that you do, you and your team. It's a great team. And I ran into somebody in the community the other day that I meet a lot of people, but she reminded me that she was part of your team. So just a lot of good work that you do with a lot of compassion for everybody, regardless of their flavor.
Yeah.
Regardless of their income status too, I think that's important. We're not serving just our.
Yeah, I will say, sorry, excuse me, but the majority of those that we serve, they're right at not even 50% AMI. So the majority of individuals who are above that threshold, they can afford the counseling, they can afford the services, they can afford to go rent another apartment, they can afford, you know, to go get the counseling and the other supportive services that they need. But right now, those that we serve is mostly 50% AMI and below.
Thank you.
Ms. Chairman, I have a couple questions. Could you elaborate a little more on what the Southwest District Health Grant is? I see it's for $84,000.
It was the Youth Rock program that they initiated, and it's been a three-year program that's been highly, it has kicked off, and it was kind of like the emergency shelter. It's not the shelter, but there's the program for individuals that in an emergency here in Canyon County, they can go and get the 24-hour service. So it's 23 hours, 59 minutes and 59 seconds, and then you're on your way. That's what this was a program for youth that was specifically like that. So if there's a youth that feels like they're going to commit suicide or that they're needing some additional services, that they're being abused in some sort of way, we've seen such an increase in the youth today that are suicidal. Like, it's just unbelievable. So they go to Southwest District Health. They've opened that new clinic. They go there first. And then we're all of the supportive services on this side of it. They don't do any supportive services there. So once that youth has been there for that 24 hours, then they're referred out over to us. And then we've been doing that for the last 3 years. But then this last year, we finally said, you've got to find some funding to support these positions, because if you don't, we can't continue to serve on this side of it. So we wrote a grant together, and that supports part of that program. But we have three advocates that have a full caseload. Like I said, each one of them has 17 to 18 on their caseload. And then we are also supporting all of the youth in the community through our own program that we're out teaching healthy relationships.
Do you know who funds that grant?
I believe it's the state. It's a state grant.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Another one is, what do you do for fundraising? Do you have like an annual event or something?
We work our tails off for fundraising. We do have our annual gala. It's every October. And that is our Hope Down. And every year we try to keep the funds coming. This past year it only funded $26,000, so people aren't giving like they used to, and I think it's just because of that where we're at nationally and where the political arena is, and people are just really honestly afraid. I mean, they've had to figure out how to survive from COVID too, you know. All the cost of goods has gone up exponentially. And when I look at the cost of goods and just everybody raising their costs, but then I look at the effects of domestic abuse and sexual assault in those production lines, 1 in 3 of their staff are being impacted by that. So how many staff aren't showing up to work and calling in sick because of whatever? How many at work are being like, I don't have the mental capacity to do my work today, so I'm gonna just do the bare minimum or whatever? That directly impacts our cost of goods sold. And so I look at the impact of abuse, and so yeah, COVID played into it, but the true first pandemic was abuse.
Go ahead.
I have one more question, Mr. Chairman. Your 2023 P&L has a sale of assets, but I don't see it in the budget. Do you have any planned usage for that?
Yeah, that is earmarked for our new shelter. We have to build a new shelter, or we have to completely gut the one that we're in and remodel and redo it. We're working on the comprehensive study right now. We're working with Cushing Terrell here in town, and they're doing the comprehensive study with us, and we've got some extra land up there that we can potentially build on, that the shelter itself sits on just a little over an acre. And then we sold off the front portion. It's about almost 2 acres, so we sold off that front portion, which was a large chunk, and then we sold a property that we had in Homedale. It was a neighborhood stabilization program home. It was just too hard to manage one home out in Homedale, so we sold that, and those proceeds came to us. And then our developer fee from the third phase of our apartments was paid out to us too. So that's sitting there, it's sitting there, and it's earmarked for a new shelter or the start of a capital campaign or to gut what we already have and completely redo it. But then when I look at doing that, then where are we going to put all of those survivors in the meantime? And so we've got all of this going on in our comprehensive study. So,
Chairman, I wanted to comment because Commissioner Brooks is the Swiss Army knife of the team, but he does a lot of remodels and my own DIY fair share. But I've toured the shelter, and it was last year that I was interested in knowing, given the influx and people in need of services, what does it look like in Ada County? What does it look like in the city of Nampa? What does it look like at the Western Crisis Center? I've been in all of those facilities. I met with Interfaith Sanctuary. It is a very different program than what we're running in Canyon County, and I will submit that her heart is about as big as the state of Texas, but that program runs very differently. A lot of call-outs for police, that there's some conflict there. Your shelters run very differently than that there, and I appreciate the way that you're managing that, and I don't see the demand going down. Nampa Family Justice, I toured that center. I've been in there a couple of times, and I've talked with their director. It's still just a 23-hour and 59-minute. And then the Western Crisis Center, still 23-hour and 59-minute, even though people are re-upping. And that's, it's meeting a need, but it's very different than the need that you're meeting. So the other problem with remodeling on a facility that I would see, remodels are black holes. You don't know what you're going to get into. And you would have to do that because it's on the historic register. It's going to be more expensive because you have to meet the specs to maintain that register status. And all that being said, it would be more cost effective for new construction than it would be to try and retrofit everything that needs to be done on that. It's worth touring your facility to look at that, and I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Yeah, the main structure is structurally sound. We had the historical architect out, and she goes, "Do you have a dirt room?" And I said, "Oh yeah, we got a dirt room." So we went down to the dirt room, She was crawling around and she turned around and she goes, "How old is this building?" And I said, "It just turned 102. And she said, I was expecting her to say, "Okay, we got to tear it down now." But she said, "I have never seen such a clean, dry dirt road." She said, "This building is really, honestly, the timbers, everything is so structurally sound that we could just gut the interior of it and completely remodel the interior. If we use historical funding, there's more restrictions. But if we don't use historical funding, the restrictions aren't there. It sits on the National Historical Register, and all that is a status, really. But if we seek any historical funding, then it has to be done to spec because it's the historical funding."
Gotcha.
I've applied for National Historical Funding, and we got $5,000 one year. And we, you know, the county, we received historical funding, but that replaced one window.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's historical, then it has to be replaced to that status.
So. Thanks for that input. And I know we're out of time for this budget, but I want to provide support. Their request is $75,000. It's $1,000 less than we did last year. But I'm in favor of doing this because of the many needs that it meets in the community. And I'm also in favor of soliciting partnerships from surrounding counties and cities that use those services. And so those numbers would be important to me as well. But I think that the ask is, what does it do in and for the community of Canyon County? And I think the ask is less than the services that are provided, particularly given the salaries that these people are doing in the heart of the community.
Mr. Chairman, I'm in favor of adding it so we can continue discussion later down the road.
I would be too. I'll make note that their written presentation is outstanding, that they have connected item number 9 for this commissioner, and they have demonstrated beyond a reasonable doubt that direct funding to them is greatly reducing a direct cost that Canyon County would otherwise incur if they didn't exist. So that more than meets the bar for this commissioner. So I am also in favor of considering this to be brought forward in the budget at this budgetary process. Are we all in consensus?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, let the record show that we, at this point in the budget hearing, are accepting this amount and are going to be carrying that forward into the workshops. All right, thank you.
Thanks for being here, Kim. Thanks for all you do. Please call your team. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Kim.
Let's do a quick pause and then we'll start with the next agenda item.